Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So we have got a big podcast episode today. I've just released a video on my YouTube channel talking about what TaylorMade are going to do next. How can they possibly beat or better the performance of their M5 and M6 driver by their own accounts? They were the fastest driver faces they can possibly make. They even went as far as making the driver faces illegal before inserting resin to bring it back right on the limit set by the RNA. And the USGA. So we're going to be covering that topic today in the podcast. If you are new around here, welcome to the podcast. This is episode number 5. It's a platform where we talk about golf, we talk about golf news, we talk about new things that are coming up in the YouTube landscape, but also in, let's say, maybe tour life. Certainly a very equipment heavy podcast, so if you like all that sort of stuff, make sure you subscribe and get tuned in, and hopefully you've come over from the new YouTube video just released. I'm joined here with producer Guy, who's on the podcast every week.
Hello Rick, I am very excited for this podcast. I think ever since we spoke to TaylorMade back in January of this year and they gave us this talk that the M5 and the M6 were actually illegal and then filled with resin to bring them back to just on the edge, I knew they were going to have a tough 2020. But one thing I want to do before we get into this topic is I just want to read a quick line to you off the TaylorMade website, okay? Every M5 driver head has been individually calibrated to reach a threshold of the maximum legal limit of ball speed. So whether you're fighting for your club championship or battling it out on your weekend four ball, you'll be playing with a driver that's engineered to make everybody faster.
Wow. That's a bold statement. That came from TaylorMade website. Yeah. And when we spoke to TaylorMade, say Guy said at the start of the year, they were really pushing this idea that they have reached a limit. They cannot make a driver face any faster. So we got us thinking, as we're now starting to see new product for 2020, and little caveat, we've not seen the product yet for TaylorMade for 2020 yet. I'm sure it'll be coming soon. What can they possibly do to make you, the listener, better at golf? What can they possibly do to make you hit the ball further? What can they possibly do to make you want to upgrade your driver to the latest? Guesses on names?
And I think that's why it's...
Is it going to be M7, M8?
I want to come on to names in a moment, but I think this is why it's a perfect time for us to do this podcast. As you just touched on, then we haven't seen it yet. So literally everything that we are saying now, we are making up, we are guessing. And it's going to be really interesting to look back at this or listen back maybe in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks and see how many things we've actually got right or how many things we've got wrong. Naming wise, I'm going to go out on a limb and say M7, M8.
I think it's time to get rid of those names. I would be... Again, I'd probably be wrong on this, but it wouldn't surprise me if they went for a different franchise this time. Something like, I can't even think of one off the top of my head. I'm sure it'll be quite simple still. I know other brands, which we can't talk about yet, have actually changed brand names, so it'd be interesting to see if TaylorMade does the same. Now, just to give you a heads up, if you are new in a round about what equipment looks like, typically launch-wise, TaylorMade, for the last 4 or 5 years, have typically shown off their new drivers at the start of January. Now, we've got a rough date in mind when it's going to probably be. It's probably normally like to be the first week of January. That's where you'll see my full review on YouTube testing the M7 or M8 or whatever it's going to be called. So make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. But like I say, we've not got the product yet and we are nearing the end of November. And it's just so fascinating. As I covered a few points in the latest YouTube video I've just released, if they are claiming that the M5 and M6 is as fast as it can possibly go. How are they ever going to sell a story or spin a story about speed? Because, let's be honest, they've got Twistface. That came out in the M3 and M4, continued in M5 and M6. Twistface, and again, when that came out, if you remember, Guy, 2 years ago, or two years ago, they said Twistface is going to be in every single driver TaylorMade produces for the foreseeable future. So I'm fully expecting Twistface to still be in the latest TaylorMade driver. I'm fully expecting the speed ports to be in the new driver face. I'd be surprised if it wasn't. So therefore, if they can't touch the face, where are they going to touch next? There's a massive story, and I think we're going to see a lot more of this moving into 2020, about aerodynamics and how they can make the club head speed faster, how they can make you as a golfer, let's say you typically swing at 100 miles per hour, which is just above average swing speed for a driver, how can they possibly squeeze out an extra 1, 2, 3 miles per hour out of your performance, which then turns into ball speed, which then turns into distance?
Yeah, and I think the big thing to note here, and I think we've been pretty clear on the video, and hopefully will be in this podcast, is we're not saying that distances, they've hit a peak in terms of distance, because if you can get stronger, you can get fitter, you can swing the golf club faster, you can always find more distance. But what we are saying is that in terms of the R&A and the USJ ruling, that they can't make the club face any faster. So if you swing at 100 miles an hour and hit it out the middle of the face with certain launch and certain spin, etc., then a new driver, the face can't be any faster.
Yeah, exactly. So we did a little bit more digging. I kind of knew this, but we tried to simplify it in the video about the characteristic of time, the CT test. And it's a test that gets carried out on every driver that comes to market, certainly from the samples that the manufacturers give to the governing bodies. And it's a way they use a pendulum device, and it's like a steel ball or almost a steel disc, which is the same circumference as a golf ball. It hits the driver face, and inside that pendulum disc is thousands of sensors that measure the contact time between the face and that object. Now, the speed has to be, it can't be in contact for any longer than 257 milliseconds, because if it is, it's therefore too bouncy, too trampoline-y. And that was a trampoline-y?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it works. I know what you mean.
Too springy. So if the face is too springy, too trampoline-y, too hot, it is then deemed illegal and it wouldn't come out to manufacturers. Therefore, you know, it would be breaking the rules. So they have to work at a tolerance. And we touched on it slightly in the video. Do we ever see, or would we ever see, the day where those rules change? Will there ever be a time where the rules are a bit more relaxed, or, you know, they are working in conjunction with manufacturers and brands to make better product potentially? But with all the talk about distance at the moment and almost turning back the ball, if any way I think it's going to change, it'll change the other way, as opposed to being more friendly. I think they'll be a lot more strict, certainly regarding distance. The R&A and the USG have a responsibility for the game of golf. They are the governing bodies of golf. And there's a lot of talk about, certainly tour players, making a somewhat mockery of the golf courses because they are hitting it so unbelievably far. And therefore, should they use a different golf ball? Should they use a golf ball that only flies 90%? Which I don't agree with. What I love about golf, personally, is that I can literally build a set that is exactly the same as Brooks Koepka and play on exactly the same golf course as Brooks Koepka from exactly the same tees as Brooks Koepka with the exact same ball.
And shoot 18 more than him.
And shoot, 18 to 20 plus more shots. But I can do that.
Yeah.
There's nothing that's, you know, by the expense of it all, obviously, but there's nothing that's stopping me absolutely mirroring the performance characteristics or the environment that these best players in the world have to put up with in tournament play. I'm not saying it's easy to do all that, but it's possible.
Yeah.
It's not like that in any other sport.
I was just thinking that then. I mean, you could argue you could run the route of the London Marathon, but that's a bit. But you can't go and play on Anfield, Liverpool's football ground, or Old Trafford unless it's I think if you actually played at Old Trafford, I think you have.
Listen, I don't want to boast. I have played football at Old Trafford, yes.
Right, okay, well, maybe we can. But as a rule, golf, like you just touched on then, you can literally, although it's quite difficult, but you can go to St Andrews, you can get on the old course, and you can walk over the Swillcombe Bridge, and you can play the golf course that Tiger Woods has won a major at, and that's unique to golf. Just a quick side note on this podcast, on the video as well. We're not picking on TaylorMade. The reason we're calling out TaylorMade is because they came up with such a bold statement. A lot of brands have said they've got a fast face and the fastest ever. But what was unique with the story last year, or this year should I say, is the fact that TaylorMade have claimed they actually went beyond the law. They made the driver illegal and then brought it back to the absolute limit. So it just seems like, how on earth can they make anything faster? And that's why we're talking about TaylorMade, because they had such a bold claim and a bold story.
Yeah, exactly. And as Guy touched on there, it's a perfect point. We actually, first off, thought this idea that what a brand's going to do next, yeah. What are actual, all the brands going to do, but none of them were as bold or as ballsy or as marketed hype as TaylorMade were by making this ridiculously bold statement. Everyone said they get a little bit better, the face is a little bit faster, the ball speed is a little bit better, but none of them claim to say they made the fastest face and that is it, the end of. So that's what's why it's so interesting. So I think, like I say, golf is unique in the fact that we can play the same courses, same situations, and therefore I'm not the biggest fan of rolling back the ball or making any exceptions for the best players in the world. I think that takes away a lot of the magic inside of golf. So going back to that topic, the USGA or the RNA going to change the rules to make the ball speed faster? No, it's not going to happen. There might be some tweaks and changes around aerodynamics, I don't know, but they're never going to make the ball go further. I just can't see it happening. So brands have just got to be clever. And that's where they have, obviously, teams of engineers. They are cleverer than us. And a lot of the time, I almost relate it, and Guy does as well, to like the new iPhones. You don't know you want it until they show it you.
Yeah.
You don't know that you wanted panoramic picturing, or you didn't know you wanted a faster system, or you didn't know you wanted Face ID or Siri or, you know, portrait mode until they were put in a phone and you're like, I need that in my life.
Yeah.
And that's a little bit like golf equipment to some degree. Until someone produces it, you don't know you want it. And that's where it'll be so intriguing. I think this year more than ever, I'm excited to see new products, because sometimes it's been predictable what's going to come next.
Yeah.
Honestly, right now, as we near the end of 2019, I do not know what's going to come next from certain brands.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I almost can't comprehend how they can come up with anything new. They're going to, let's be honest. I've got some notes here of things I think they could do. I'm not saying they will do. I think you touched on this in the video. I think they're going to go down this route of more clubhead speeds. They're going to try and make the clubs possibly more aerodynamic. Or they may, which they've done before, make the shafts longer, which I'm not a fan of, I'll be honest. But I think most drivers now are coming in at 45.5 inches, possibly touching 46. Obviously, the limit within the RNA and the USGA ruling is 48 inches. So the brands have still got an extra 2 inches to play with there. The downside, as we know, is that the longer length of shaft you go, yes, you're going to generate clubhead speed. That doesn't always transfer into ball speed, because strikes obviously start to vary and obviously direction can start to go way off. But they could get us gaining more speed with longer shafts.
By cheating.
Cheating.
If I'm honest. That's pretty much it. It's a bit like why irons go longer these days, because a 34-degree 7-iron now no longer exists. 7-irons from many of the main manufacturers are nearer to 30, and even some are sub-30 degrees. It's not the fact that they've created this phenomenal new kind of process to make irons. Well, they have to a degree. They make them look better, definitely. But a lot of the distance comes from the fact that they've jacked the lofts, but then moved the weight as low as they possibly can to still make the ball go up in the air.
I've got one for you. Just thought of. I might have to sell this to a brand, actually.
Whoa, hold on then. Let's get some copyright on this.
This is copyrighted.
Guys, you heard it here first. If any brand comes out with this idea, you heard
it's
it here on
my
the Rick
idea.
Shields. No, you heard it on the Rick Shields podcast, all right?
Idea. Okay, so we both agree that, you know, making a driver 48 inches is kind of cheating. Well, it's not actually cheating, but it's a cheating way around it. But what if a brand came out and said, okay, our new driver, it is 48 inches, so it's 2-3 inches longer than our competitors, but we've engineered a technology in the shaft or in the head. Let's call it like the Odyssey Stroke Lab, where they've taken some weight away, etc. So our 48-inch shaft gains you more clubhead speed, but we've actually been able to keep the club as stable and as accurate as a 45-inch driver. So we're giving you 3 inches more length so you can get more speed, but we can guarantee you're not going to then lose that in direction. You can actually gain more ball speed off the back of it.
If anybody's tuning into this podcast late, then you might interpretate that whole line as very different. You suddenly listen to this podcast at work and your boss walks in, you go, and they're talking about like lengths of shafts. I mean, ball speed. I mean drivers, golf clubs. I think like I said, they'll always come up with something new, something different. I'm excited to see it, and that's probably not a bad idea to try and make something that's longer, that's going to get you more speed, but then tame it back to some degree to make it manageable. Because I tested, was it this year or end of last year, a driver, we made it 50 inches long. And it doesn't sound like a lot. It's only 5 inches longer than standard. But it was ridiculously hard to swing. You had to really be so on the ball to make decent contact. Now, in fairness to it, when you made decent contact, there was distance gains, yes, but not significantly ridiculously 15 yards. And that brings us back onto another point we put in the video. I think what's been more challenging now for brands is they can't lie about any of this anymore.
Yeah.
Go back to the early 2000s where brands were talking, and probably even nearer to 2010, where brands were talking about, you're going to buy this driver and you're going to hit it 15, 20, 30, 50 yards longer. Doesn't matter what the distance was. Because back then, it was harder to manage, harder to measure. You wouldn't be able to go to a golf shop and say, oh, can I try that new X driver because it's promising to hit it 10, 15 yards further. Because launch monitors weren't as popular, because advice wasn't as popular. And a lot of the time, you might have had a driver that's 5 years old, and when you got fitted for that driver, or when you bought that driver, should I say, you weren't fitted. Suddenly you move into a fitted driver that has evolved a little bit, and yeah, you gain distance. That's going away these days, because a lot of people that use drivers now have been fitted from it when they first bought it. So you'd like to think that Optimize was already perfected at that point of sale when they first bought that driver. And 5 years down the line, when they go to buy the new driver, or 10 years down the line, things haven't changed as much because you're already optimized.
Yeah, that's true. There's nowhere for brands to hide now. But one thing I've just thought of that I want to ask you. So we know that most golf brands, not always, but most golf brands, certainly with driver, the name changes year on year. So, you know, Callaway went Rogue, then Epic Flash, before that it was Rogue, you know, TaylorMade have been M5, before that it was M3. And, you know, there's always these new names or new numbers, etc. Now, as consumers and golfers, when we see a driver with a whole new name, it's like you touched on, you didn't think next year would be M7 or M8. Let's just call it TaylorMade, Tour, whatever. We almost expect that driver is going to perform much better than previous years. It's got a new name, it's all shiny. What would happen if brands sort of approached more similar to those of car manufacturers or camera brands, where they had a TaylorMade M1, let's call it, the next year it was the Mark 2, the next year it was the Mark 3, the Mark 4. So for example, I've got a VW golf car, I don't know what mark it is, Mark 7 possibly, if they've been out for 20, 30 years, let's say. So then when the new one comes out, you don't expect it to have loads of all singing and dancing. You quite respect if it's got a slight tweak. So if this year it was coming out and it was the TaylorMade M1 and M2 Mark 4, would brands have it easier because they don't have to invent all these stupid names and stupid claims? People would just respect it as being the new M1. They'd also gain that little bit more traction in the industry because people would, it'd be easy to navigate. You'd know what brand is what. The downside is people may get less excited and maybe less keen to upgrade from a Mark 1 because they've still got an M1. What do you think on that?
I think Ping tried to do that a couple of years ago. They dropped the number, if you remember, when they brought out the Ping G driver. All the communications was when that came out is that there'd be no longer a number.
Yeah.
This would be the Ping G driver. And like you said, it would be version 1, version 2, version 3. That lasted 2 years, and it didn't even have a new version because it soon moved into the G400, and now it's the G410. So they tried it, and for whatever reason, there must have been a reason why they then went back to the number. They didn't think it worked. And I've got, it's not controversial because we know the numbers. People get excited about the BS marketing.
Yeah.
People like it. And as much as they don't want to like it, they get excited because golf's bloody hard, as we all know. And any glimpse of hope that you're going to hit the ball further or hit it straight or golfers, we get excited. Mm-hmm. Now, it's our job, my job as a tester, to cut through those claims and say if they're truth or not truth or whatever. And I'll praise a brand if they accomplish such feats, and I'll slag them off if they don't. But I honestly think golfers get quite excited about it. And going back to your point, if it was just a Mark 2, Mark 3, whatever it may be, I honestly think golfers wouldn't like it. They just get...
What if I'm going to counter this or something then? Not a driver, but two products that have done it, essentially done it and been really successful. AP2 and Pro V1.
Yeah.
Although they had the AP2 non-number, then they had 710, 712, 714, 716, 718, if I'm correct. And then last...
718, yeah, the last one, yeah.
So that was, I think that's six, without counting again. And then Pro V1, since the year 2000, has just been called Pro V1. I know it's not got a mark next to it, but we all know it's like the iteration of the year, whatever. They've built massive franchises and been really successful, but they haven't had to swap it too much.
I think golf ball's different.
Okay.
That's the only one. I think golf ball's different.
I think you're right.
Because everybody has to buy golf balls throughout the season. Do you know what I mean? So it's not as much of an investment, upfront investment. Mm-hmm. It's broken down into the following year. And yeah, the new ball comes out, but you're not that in a rush. If you had a big box of the old balls,
you'd use the old one.
Yeah, you're not going to jump. And if someone said to you, the old balls are 10 or cheaper, you'd probably buy the old balls. With irons, I think, again, it's slightly different with irons because, again, you don't buy irons quite as frequently. I like to think probably most people have irons in the bag a little bit longer than the new driver. Just for the plain simple, they're more expensive. You know, for a set of AP2s, that'd be interesting to know what they started price-wise.
Yeah.
I bet they were nearer £400. Yeah. And now that when they last came out, they were nearer £700 or £800, yeah, if not a grand.
Yeah,
And they've not changed a great deal. So yeah, I think there are certain strands. I think you've got to build that trust. And let's say, it'd be interesting with TaylorMade TP5, if that continues, because they've seen the success from the ball that they've had. But you saw it when you used to work for Nike. When you do change brands all the time, change naming, it just doesn't work, does it?
Yeah, that Nike tried to do it pretty much every year with the golf ball. And it was really hard. It was even hard for staff of the brand to kind of navigate and remember. I think you had, obviously, the first ball, one of the first ones, the Tour Accuracy. Then they had the 20XI. They've had the Resin. And that's just three names of the premium ball. There is more than that. And people started to go into a pro shop, and you'd see Pro V1 sat there in its gold box, Pro V1X in its black and silver box, right? I know those. Then you've got Nike ball next to it. Now, even if Tiger was playing it or Rory was playing it, you kind of didn't know what name it was. Next year, it changed again. It was very difficult for people to trust that brand and want to use the ball. TaylorMade did it as well. They had the Lethal. They've had the Penta. Now they're on the TP5. It looks like they're sticking with TP5, or they certainly have for a couple of years, which I think is really important. But I think you're right in what you said. I think golf ball, and you can build these franchises up. People, regardless of what we say, people want to see the whole new TaylorMade driver, and it wants to have a fancy name, and they want to go out and try, and they want it to go further. Simple as that.
Yeah, it is. It is literally as simple as that. Anyway, there are thoughts on it. We are excited. Certainly, I'm excited to get hold of the new TaylorMade, whatever it's going to be in January. I'm just so intrigued to see what, if they present the new product to us and I go, well, you said you couldn't make the face any faster and now you're saying it's going faster. Or whether they just go, we can't make the face any faster, but we've changed X, Y, and Z and we now think you'll hit the ball further. Yeah. That will all be tested right on the Rick Shields YouTube channel. Start of January. Don't miss out. Make sure you subscribe for free. Make sure you like the video when it drops and all that jazz. And I think, I don't know if I touched it on the start of the podcast. If you are new on the podcast as well, if you come from the YouTube, like I say, make them every week. As you see, we can dive into a little bit more of an interesting story. We might video one day down the line, and certainly looking at getting guests on the podcast as well. But if you are enjoying it, make sure you subscribe to the podcast and leave a review. We are currently in the process of setting up a hotline as such, an email address for the podcast, so stay tuned for that. We'll put all that, if we have, in the link down in the description of the podcast. But the other things we're going to cover in today's episode is, we released a video the other day, what's in the bag, what clubs I'm currently using, so we'll talk a little bit more about that. We also went filming with a really cool guy yesterday, Eddie Hall, World Strong Man 2017. Now, this guy's never played golf before, and I went down to meet him to see if I can help him play golf and see how fast he could basically swing the golf club. We're going to talk about a new concept I've got actually going out tonight, Range Night, which I'll talk about, and then we've got some questions as well.
There's one thing you forgot.
I was going to let you bring that in.
Well, perfect timing. So last year we started something, last week we started something where I was being quite provocative in bringing up these topics that I was trying to get you to change your mind on. So last year I said, last week.
Did it feel that long ago? It was only last week. It was actually last Friday.
So many videos since then. Last week I said to you that custom fitting is overrated and I wanted to try and change your mind. We came out to the conclusion that it's not overrated, but there's some elements that possibly are a touch. This week's a big one. You don't know what you do not know what I've got written here, and it's quite bold. And I'm not saying I agree with it, but I just like it for the controversy. You ready? And I'm going to give you all my points first, and I'm going to drop the mic, and you've got to try and get an answer.
Am I on the side of defence?
I think you're going to defend it. Well, I hope you are. If you're not, it defeats the object at this point. But okay, I'm going to go against it. So, you ready? Drum roll, please. Pro V1 is overrated.
Wow. Okay.
Moment of silence. I'm going to give you my points.
Go for it.
It's very expensive. When it was introduced in the year 2000, I think it was the year 2000, it was revolutionary. There was nothing on the market like it. I think now, 20 years later, every ball from the premium brand is as good, if not potentially better. Does it actually perform any better than, let's just say, a Strix and Z-Star? Because if there's any evidence to prove that, I'm willing to be open to see that. I think the only reason it has done so, so well is that they've nailed the branding. Players trust it. I think a lot of players that are up and coming now who might be 25 years old or even 30 years old would have been like literally 5 years old when the Pro V1 was launched. They've grown up playing it. So they just, it's just the go-to. It's just like brushing your teeth in the morning. You just play a Pro V1. But actually, is it any better than anything else? Again, I'm willing to be proved that it is. And
tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah. Tell me.
So Pro V1 is overrated. Well, you kind of, you, there's a lot of the points there you made were against and for the Pro V1 in some regards.
So I'm for it in as much as I understand why people perceive it as being the best, but actually, is there any evidence out there to say that it is? It's what I'm getting to.
So I'm going to back this up with a statement from Bob Parsons.
Okay.
So Bob Parsons, who is the owner of PXG Golf, Parsons Extreme Golf, the really expensive golf brand. I was at a golf day with him. He was the hosting it, and he did a keynote speak. And he was talking about how he started PXG. And, you know, he actually went back a long way from when he used to be in the military and then also then set up GoDaddy, the web domain, and loads of things, and set up PXG. He was a super golf fan, and he wanted to set up a golf company because he was spending hundreds of thousands of $1,000 a year on golf equipment. So his mate said, why don't you set it up? The guy's a billionaire, why not? Right. So he set PXG up. And the objective of PXG was to dominate every single market. So from drivers to irons to wedges to putters to golf balls.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one of those items on that list that Bob Parson, PXG, do not make. And it's not for the want of trying. They do not make a golf ball. And the reason being, so as you know, PXG, they plow ridiculous amounts of money into research, into engineers, into testing, etc., etc. He fully attempted to smash down the Pro V1. He fully wanted number one golf ball in the world, the best performing golf ball in the world. So he put a lumpy sum of money down behind the research and development of a golf ball that could beat a Pro V1. Halfway through the process, he quit trying to make a PXG golf ball. And I can't remember the exact wording, but he basically said, nothing that I can do will make a golf ball better than a Pro V1.
Hmm. I'm not saying I don't believe you, I just don't believe that.
Okay.
I don't think any PXG product is better than anything from Callaway, Ping, TaylorMade, Titleist. It's on par, but it's not better. And I think if he could make a golf ball that was as good, he would happily bring it out to market. So maybe, you know, maybe he's tried. But is it just the fact that as a businessman, yeah, he's got a hell of a lot of money, but he doesn't want to enter a market he just knows that he can't break down?
Possibly. But yeah.
And that's his cool story behind it.
Yeah, possibly. I think that the to really try and tackle the Pro V1. So let me go back into this. That was just an interesting story I thought I'd bring
just,
up.
Just
as
one
a
side note on that. Just one side note. I know it was only a story. If he'd brought a ball out that was $100 a box, that would be a perfect PXG product. That the guy always meant, you only use a Pro V1. Well, I play the PXG Star.
True.
It's the perfect product for PXG. So I think he just hasn't been able to manufacture a ball for some reason. I don't know. But.
Well, that's one of the advantages that Titleist has got. Titleist started off as a golf ball company. They make golf balls from the off, and they've really built all their infrastructure around the ball company. They didn't make golf clubs. They made balls first. And they create, distribute everything in-house. They own the factories. They own the processes. They own everything, every element of it. Where other manufacturers had to branch out to secondary companies, distributors, etc. To make their golf balls, where they make them all in-house. So anyway, regarding that, this is my defense on why I think a Pro V1 is... I'm going to go on performance, because I would possibly agree with you with the price. I do think golf balls are too expensive, personally, because £3.50, £4 a ball is just ridiculous. Performance-wise, I think there's nothing that really matches the level of performance from tee to green with the Pro V1. I've used a TP5 for the last couple of years, and I've switched recently back to a Pro V1. For the pure simple fact, I do like, as you mentioned, I grew up playing a Pro V1,
yeah.
And it's reassuring for me. I don't have to question a Pro V1. Where sometimes with a TP5, it's still, I don't know, in its infancy.
Yeah.
And, there's a few times that you question, would that ball have done that with a Pro V1 potentially? I always feel like sometimes I hit a TP5 a little bit hotter than I want to, certainly with iron shots, and I think, would that have happened with a Pro V1? I'm not sure. So me going back to a Pro V1 is just reassurance. I'm not playing every single day, so I just like the fact that I can pick up a premium packet out my bag and I know it's going to perform.
Yeah.
The other thing I honestly believe that is unmatched from any other company is the durability. Mm-hmm. I do honestly think the durability of a Pro V1 is phenomenal over every other brand. I've tested it numbers of times where I've hit loads of shots. Unless you really do hit a path or something, it does really stand the test of time. But on that whole side, I honestly don't think it's worth £3.50, £4 a ball. But I honestly don't think anything is really for that price. We did a video where we actually bought a box of refurbished Pro V1s. And I've got to be honest, the performance was pretty awesome, as much as Titleist would have hated that. The performance was really good on the refurbished golf ball, bar the cover just wasn't quite as durable as a brand new Pro V1 out of the box. But I like that. It's a good topic.
Yeah, I think one just a little note on this as well. I'm obviously doing this just to pick topics that are quite controversial so we can discuss. I do genuinely actually believe that Pro V1 is the best golf ball, but I think these debates are healthy. It can get people looking at things from a different angle. And, you know, next time you go to the pro shop to just naturally buy your Pro V1s at £45 a dozen, whatever, maybe there's a Strix and Z Start. You might think, you know what, I'm just going to try it. And you might love it. You might save yourself some money. And, you know what, that's one of those things. Try new things, I guess.
I think so. I like that. That's a good little point. Right. We've had quite a lot of interest from sponsors for the podcast, Guy.
Well, it's funny you say that, actually, because I tried to get on some emails this morning. It was actually down. It crashed because I had so many emails regarding sponsoring the podcast. So I'm excited to see who we've actually gone with this
week.
Well,
we've actually held off, if I'm honest. Okay. We've held off for some big sponsorship deals for the podcast. So, you know, we're still debating. We're still, you know, crunching some numbers with a few different, you know, offers, etc.
Yeah.
But the one that's been there from the very start, the one that we trust and the one that we'll always go to, the Rick Shields Facebook page, ladies and gentlemen. Fifth episode in, and they continue to support and hold up the foundations of the Rick Shields Show podcast. The Facebook page is absolutely crushing it at the moment. In fact, we just released a video 3 days ago where I played a par five with a wedge, and it's just had 1 million views in 3 days. Who would have thought it? Growing at a ridiculous rate. We're just over 140,000 followers now on the Rick Shields page. Every single day, you're going to be getting new videos, coaching videos, shorter versions of YouTube videos, funny videos, unique opportunities, very different content to what I've post on the other channels. When I say me, I mean Rick Shields Facebook page. So guys, make sure you jump over to the Rick Shields Facebook page. Make sure you hit that follow and like button, and make sure you share the content around. One of the big goals for anybody watching who's new to the Facebook page, see if you can become a top fan. Now, a top fan is somebody who comments a lot, likes everything, and you get awarded a little shield of appreciation with a top fan shield. And I tell you what, you get some love from me. When I see your comments, I'll definitely like them and reply to as many as I can. But yeah, Rick Shields Facebook page, proud sponsor of the Rick Shields Show podcast, and continues to be the foundation of this whole show.
They are really good guys, aren't
they? They are. You know, I really like the guys over there as well. They're such, you know, they're switched on. That's what I like about it. I've got a thing going on tonight. And you're coming along, Guy, and quite a lot of other people are coming along. I hope so. I'm running a night called Range Night. And quite simply, it is a get-together of golfers who, you know, watch the content, watch the YouTube, watch the Facebook, etc. And they're coming down. We've managed to set up a really cool deal with Trafford Golf Centre, where I used to coach. It's £10. You get unlimited golf balls and a free drink, and you get to come and meet some familiar faces. Now, this is a limited offer. There's only a certain amount of spaces that... And this is amazing. So I actually been thinking about this idea for 3 or 4 weeks, set it all up. The date was locked in the diary, the 28th of November tonight. This is when we're filming the podcast. And I hadn't promoted it at all. You know, I was like, I better do something about this. Monday this week, I put a tweet on, an Instagram post and a Facebook post. In fact, it didn't even get to Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. And we needed 50 golfers to participate in this range night, a get together, a meet up. The spots went in 18 minutes.
Wow.
And we had 300 people wanting to come to range night. So the first one's tonight. I'm going to make a little cool video around it as well. Whether that'll be a Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube video, we'll wait and see. We'll see what happens. But it's going to be a fun night. Loads of golf balls being hit. Some familiar faces like myself, Peter Finch, Hannah Davis, Dan Whitaker, other YouTubers, Simon Smith, SAS Golfer, who I gave a shout out in last week's episode. Loads of YouTubers are coming down as well, so it should be really good fun. So stay tuned for more of those range nights. If it goes well, I'll sure to do some more in the future. I think it's a really cool little concept. Skipping back, we said we were going to talk about this. What's in the bag?
Oh, yeah.
I released a What's in the Bag video this week as well, guys. No massive surprises. If you've not seen it, I've changed a few key areas of my golf bag this year. My irons have changed. My wedges have changed. My putter has just changed. But really, if I'm honest, just for a different colour. And like I mentioned a minute ago, my golf ball has changed. So if you want to go and check that out, you can do. I think this year has been a really good year for product. Again, I do honestly. I think the companies, as much as maybe the performance of everything isn't significantly better, I just think, you know, like most things in life, things start to look better.
You know what I think as well is really good for the viewers of the channel. Obviously, a lot of people, and I say this to you a lot, I think you sometimes underestimate it. People want to know what you play. You know, you've got access to all the clubs in the world. So what you play as an, you know, you're unbiased, you're unpaid, you play what you want. So it means something to people to watch, and I get that. what I think you've done really well recently is that the whole novelty of swapping clubs has kind of been and gone. So there was a spell when I first started to work with you where it was like a new driver almost every month. When I get that, you know, you've got to test them as well. But now your kind of staple golf bag is really settled. And certainly like your 3-wood, your putter, your 2-iron, possibly your driver this year, you're not going to change it unless it's better. So then, you know, arguably means it's going to be less what's in the bag videos. And when we do film them, they're going to be quite similar to previous ones. But I think that validates the product. And if it's not broke, you're not going to be looking to fix it.
Yeah, no, good points. And like, you know, something really has to come out now. And you know, I'm not just going to put it in because I like the colour more now. I'm going to put it in because I honestly believe it's better than what I currently have in the bag. And that's validation to products that I test. So yeah, I'll be excited to see in 2020 what comes out that can potentially replace anything in my bag, because I am quite settled at the moment. If I'm honest, I just need to play more golf. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like this year, we've been so busy making videos, we've been so busy, you know, creating the media empire, that playing golf has taking a bit of a backseat. So I think we need to go out and play a little bit more golf as well. We had our little challenges last year. We didn't really video them, but I think playing a bit more golf is key, because as much as to the perception, and probably a question I get asked a lot, how much golf do you actually play? Or I think people think I play every single day. I really don't. You know, I test clubs. I'll be out filming. I'll be out making YouTube videos, Facebook videos, Instagram. But actually playing golf 18 holes with a scorecard in my hand, I would honestly say I've done 4 times this year. And that's something I would like to. I'm not going to go for Quest for the Open and all that stuff, because I'm just not good enough at all, not even close. And I think for me to try and document that now is just unneeded. But yeah, playing a bit more golf and actually just remembering what playing golf is like again. It's just hard. I've got 3 kids. It's hard to, you know, a weekend, I like my weekends off. Mm-hmm. And I like to just chill out. So unless I get opportunity in the week, but we're just busy making content. So it's hard to just go and chill out and play golf sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's a bit of a different topic, but that's one thing that's this last season for me personally, I haven't played as much golf as previous years, is that it's long, isn't it? Like, I know you don't always have to play 18 holes, but let's just say you want to play 18 with your friends. It's at least 3.5 to 4 hours. You've got to get to the golf course, which means only 10, 15 minutes, but you know, that's half an hour round trip. You don't ever just turn up for your tee time, especially if you're playing competitively. And by competitively, I just mean local club comps. You've got to get there realistically 25 to 30 minutes early to go in, pay your subs, get your scorecard, shake hands with your playing partners who you may or may not know already. So, you know, you easily look at the best part of 5 or 6 hours. Now, if you want to play at 7 in the morning, you can be done for early afternoon. But if you want to have a bit of a lie-in on your Saturday, you've worked hard all week, you know, go and play at 10 o'clock, let's just say. You know, you're only looking to be done realistically by home by 4, 5 o'clock. It is long. And I'm interested to see, you know, going forward, what will there be other golf courses open that are shorter, that are less holes? What other options are there for golfers? I think that's something that we need to look at going forward.
You know what? That is definitely a podcast topic.
Yeah.
You know what? Imagine this. Because I don't have enough of a diehard opinion on slow play to really valid an argument, let's say. What would be class if we could get a couple of people in who one on one side that golf is too slow, mm-hmm. and they're really passionate about it. And another guy that golf isn't too slow, or, you know, man or woman who isn't too slow, let's battle it out. Because I'm just so on the fence, me. Because, again, I don't play at weekends, so I don't see the really crazy rush hour traffic, let's say. But it's a bit like that's exactly, if I went on the motorway now and I drove down the M6 at 12 o'clock on or midnight on a Tuesday night, it's not going to be busy. Try and drive down at 4 p.m. Friday, 5 p.m. Friday, it's ridiculous. And that's just the difference. It depends on when you play your golf as well.
I think this, like you said, this could be a full podcast in itself.
I think it has to be, definitely.
Just one more note, though, for me. It's not some, obviously, everybody hates slow play. You can't enjoy. If there's literally someone in front of you who's taking forever, that gets frustrating. But it's not even so much me slow play, because the course could be literally empty and just me on it. It's the fact that golf in itself is quite long. And even to some extent, where I'm not going to start getting onto the argument or the discussion of dress codes or not, but if I'm at home, relaxed, I'm probably wearing just shorts or tracksuit pants or possibly jeans. If I want to go and play golf, I've got to put on some smart trousers, get my shirt on, tuck it in, etc., belt on, golf shoes. Even that, it sounds ridiculous, because I should see it as a hobby, but it's one more obstacle to make me think, you know what, I'm going to the gym for an hour, I'm going to go see my mum for an hour or something, have a coffee.
I can't be asked for all that stuff. Yeah, exactly. I get it. It's a... I think golf has to, it has to change. I don't know.
But then on the flip side of that, and I'm totally contradicting myself now, if I go and try and play golf in non-golf, in apparel, I don't feel proper. I don't feel real.
No.
It's weird, and it's like you don't have your glove on, you don't feel yourself. Strange.
That'd be another topic for a dress, for a podcast as well, dress code. Because again, yes. I'm kind of like, I don't know, I'm somewhere in the middle of that as well.
Yeah.
Let's fire through. We're going to, you know, we're in 40-odd minutes in. Let's fire through a quick fire Q&A.
Okay.
Go for it.
What's your favourite competition you've ever played in? Not necessarily one you've done well in.
Ooh.
That's Scott Griffiths.
Ooh. My instant reaction was open qualifying when I got the hole-in-one, but
Did you get hole-in-one open qualifying?
I might have done. But if I'm honest, I only remember that one tee shot,
yeah.
And it was the best moment that I've ever had on a golf course because it was just electrifying. But I'll be honest, for the 16 holes before that, I wasn't particularly having a great time.
You played okay though, didn't you?
I think I was like 3 over. I think that, yeah, it was all right.
It's
I think
3 under your handicap.
Yeah, exactly. I think, what was the now? What did I shoot? I think I finished 3 over. So I must have been 5 over at the time, had a hole in one and parred the last. So I was nowhere near the cut line to make it through. But that moment in time was the best.
Yeah.
Regarding that, I have more fonder memories when I played in competitions as a kid and as a junior. But yeah, sorry. Yeah. Open qualifying for that 17th hole or junior comps.
This is from Dale John. He's a top fan. So round of applause.
Thank you, Dale. Thank you, Dale.
See, I was getting his question answered because he's a top fan as well.
Yeah.
Shorts on tour, what's your view on that? Are you welcome to change or not?
Again, relaxed. I'm not that fussed. I'm not a short person.
No.
I don't particularly like shorts unless I'm really on holiday and out of the public, like not on camera. But yeah, I'm not
How
that.
How can it be a rule that you can't wear shorts?
Yeah,
that
it's ridiculous. Yeah, like, yeah. I'm open to it. If they want to wear shorts, they should be allowed to wear shorts. I don't believe it looks unprofessional. I don't believe, you know. And certainly stupid sock rules. Like, if they're wearing shorts, wear whatever socks you want. If you want to wear ankle socks, trainer socks, it looks better with ankle and trainer socks than it looks with longer socks. So yeah, for me, shorts should be allowed. But if I'm honest, I'm not super passionate about it.
I think what would be interesting as well, if shorts were allowed and brands had a bit more flexibility in what they produce, would they make some more like athletic looking shorts? And would that then change the whole look of golfers to non-golfers?
Yeah, that's true.
This is another from another top fan. Mark Ukehart, I think you say that.
Hi, Mark.
If you had to retire... but you were only able to play one golf course the rest of your life. What course would it be and why? Somewhere with a lot of room to the left.
Thanks, mate. Somewhere with a lot of room nonstop.
Yeah.
I think my natural answer is Augusta, because why would you not want to play that for the rest of your day every life? But if it was actually, you know, let's say if it was logistical as well.
Yeah.
Let's say if I'm still living where I'm living, I'm retired and, you know, why would I play every day, you know? Because I'd have to still get there. Somewhere like a Royal Lytham. Because that's like, I don't know, maybe Royal Birkdale or Hillside. It's like, I'm going to go Royal Birkdale. It's an hour away from my house. It's amazing condition all year round. And it's an open venue. If it was global and there was no restrictions on logistics, then obviously somewhere like Augusta.
This is my own question now. And it's a predicament I'm in at the minute. What would you, if you were a member of a golf club, which I know you're not, and obviously you've got a lot of time that you want to spend with your family, but let's say you've got some more free time, you join a golf club. Would you rather be a member of a golf club that's like an 8, 9 out of 10 conditions, are really nice, but the clubhouse is a 3? Or would you rather be a member of a 6 golf course, but the clubhouse is an 8, 9?
And when you say clubhouse at 8, 9...
out of 10, like fresh, got nice TVs, like a nice atmosphere, you know, a bit more relaxed. So the kind of place where you could go on your laptop in your jeans and your trainers and do a bit of work.
Yeah, that's a big pull for me. I'd rather have...
As opposed to a better course.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's why I probably like country clubs better than I like traditional golf clubs.
With a hotel attached, yeah.
Somewhere we go and film at the Marriott or we go and film at the Mia. That type of vibe, I love.
Yeah.
The vibe that you can actually... Not that... I'm actually not the biggest fan of this, but... You know, you can wear your hat inside if you want to. Now, I'm personally not the biggest fan. I actually traditionally like to take my hat off. It's just, I don't know, you know, when I'm in a clubhouse golf environment, if I'm around shopping, I'll keep my cap on or whatever. It's not an inside rule. But I like the fact you can wear trainers or you can wear jeans or you can be on your mobile phone or your laptop. They're the type of place I'd prefer. So that's a great question.
I'm in a similar situation at the moment myself now. I'm a member of a golf club, I'm not going to name it. Course is pretty solid. Clubhouse is quite old. It's well run, but it's quite old inside, not much room. But the old golf golf club I was a member at for basically all my life, was an all right course, but much better clubhouse. You can go watch the football on a weekend. You feel a lot more relaxed. And I feel I want that now as I'm getting a bit older. I'm not bothered about the course being amazing. I want to just go and have a laugh and chill out.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, obviously a blend of both would be ideal, but if you had to pick one or the other, more of me, as long as the golf course is not horrendous, that would be the one for me. As long as it's not like horrendous, it still have to be in nice condition. But let's go nice condition, amazing clubhouse, or amazing golf course, nice clubhouse. I'd go, oh God, I don't know. As much as I do love the idea of having this relaxed clubhouse, I think I'd still go for the golf course.
Yes, I do. I suppose it's what you're after. Archfield's got the both. Archfield up in Scotland. Yeah, nice, that's a lot. That's unbelievable. Got both.
Yeah, and like the Belfry.
Yes.
That's another one where the golf course is amazing at the Brabazon. And then Centurion Club, where we played earlier this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like that was uber modern. That was so really modern. Like, you almost look wrong if you had your hat off in the clubhouse. Yeah. It should be on backwards and your shirt untucked. Like almost a dress code.
But then St. George's Hill, where we've been a few times, I know you've not had the opportunity to get on the golf course yet, but the golf courses are phenomenal. And to be fair, that's almost that blend of still being
still a bit oldie,
super old fashioned, but just an air. You don't feel too bad with your mobile phone in the clubhouse.
No, that's true.
And Wentworth is mega relaxed, but then that's ridiculously expensive.
That's the thing. I know it's, again, you're not in this position, but if you are looking at joining a golf club, you want everything. Practice facilities as well is another big one. A lot of courses, it seems to be overlooked, and I don't know how. Maybe they find it's not beneficial for them to have great practice facilities. People don't want it. Members are more bothered about the price of the pint or whatever it might be. But it's a pull for me if you've got a good practice ground.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Let's go one more question, Guy.
I'm trying to find a good one. That's why I've been talking then. I didn't really care about your answer to that. I was just looking for a better question.
Thanks,
I'm joking. I'm joking.
There'll be plenty of top fans.
This is quite a strange one, but I think I quite like it. It's from Brett Allen. I use offset game improvement irons. I want to buy a gap wedge. Does it need to be offset as well?
Well, with wedges, the way that they're designed and the way that loft is presented at contact, wedges often go more left than right. So that's why a lot of golfers will pull their wedges as opposed to pushing them. So with offset of wedge, because offset is designed to help you not hit the ball quite as far right, so you might have offset irons, you might even, back in the day, offset drivers were super popular. But with wedges, it's not as vital because, again, you want a bit of versatility in your wedges. You might want to open it up. You might want to play it higher in loft. And as soon as you start to bring in quite an ugly offset, it's actually much easier to shank. So you're better off going for more of a standard straight-laced lob wedge look, i.e. not to offset, because I think it needs to be more versatile. And as I mentioned, wedges, because there's more loft, will often be prone to be pulled a bit more. Yeah. If you go offset, it could even go further left.
You know what I like about that question, actually, on reflection, I think it's brought an even deeper kind of topic to it, is that if you are using offset game improvement irons, the chances are they're going to be very, very strong in loft. So Brett, I don't know what irons he's got. I'm guessing his pitch wedge is going to be probably...
like 42.
Yeah, well, I was going to say 44 or stronger, but yeah, 42. If he then has a sand iron that's 56, he's got a lot of gap in there. So, and I almost feel like...
14 degrees.
Exactly. And wood, I'm not suggesting that consumer kind of would, but if that golfer walked into a retailer for a set of those irons, I feel like the custom fitter would naturally be looking at the top end of the bag, looking at what hybrids they might need to match the set. But that bottom end of the bag might get overlooked quite easily. And there's actually a lot of loft there that needs covering.
Yeah, exactly. Because every loft typically will equate to around about 3 yards. So if you've got 14 degrees of loft between two clubs, what's that like? 30 yards?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. 30 more than that. So, yeah, definitely worth looking at that side of the bag. Guys, thanks so much for listening to the Rick Shields podcast. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. If you have, make sure you subscribe. Leave us a review on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. Make sure you tell a friend. Make sure you share it around if you can. I've been loving the people who've been snapshotting the podcast and putting it on their Instagram stories. I've been sharing those out or taking a picture when they're listening to it in the car, and it's really exciting.
I've got one, Rick. Why don't we ask people to share a snapshot on their Instagram story or on Facebook or Twitter, tweet us, whatever it might be, and why don't you follow 5 people that do that?
Deal. Let's do it.
There you go.
So if you share it around in the next week, I will follow five of you at random. Guys, thanks for watching. Next week, I'm actually on a family vacation, so I'll either do the podcast on my own or we'll pre-record one, but there will be one next week as well. Guys, thanks for tuning in. Again, every Monday, you'll hear your new podcast. Thanks for listening. That's out from me and Guy at the Rick Shields Podcast. Have a great day, everyone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.